When it comes to the lean executive recruiting landscape, staying ahead means staying informed. Subscribing to the Stiles Associates email list gives you access to the latest compensation data, industry analysis, and career resources straight from their recruiting team. Plus, you'll receive hand-picked career opportunities from leading companies, whether you're seeking new challenges or just curious about the market. So head over to leanexecs.com and sign up to get on the Stiles Associates email list and transform the way you make strategic decisions for your company and your career. Thanks for listening. Did you know I can help your organization on this journey of cultivating a culture of learning and innovation? I can be a trainer, coach, and advisor on topics including psychological safety, problem solving, and continuous improvement. I can add value to your management team meetings by speaking and facilitating discussions on these important topics. To learn more, visit markgraben.com or email me, mark@markgraben.com. Let's improve together.
Welcome to the Lean Blog Podcast. Visit our website at www.leanblog.org. Now, here's your host, Mark Graben.
Hi, welcome to episode 160 of the podcast for January 4th, 2013. This is Mark Graben, back with a new episode and a number of new episodes here in January after taking a few months off at the end of 2012. So I'm very excited about that. We've got some great stuff coming up. But my guest today is Dr. Joe Garisco. He is the chairman of the Department of Emergency Medicine and System Chief of Emergency Services for the Ochsner Health System in Louisiana. Dr. Garisco is a keynote speaker at the upcoming Society for Health Systems Conference, which I'll be attending as I normally do. It's a great event. And we're both presenting, participating at the American Academy of Emergency Physicians Annual Scientific Assembly in February, where I'll be co-presenting with my Healthcare Kaizen co-author, Joe Schwartz. So you can find links to these and other events at the post for this episode at leanblog.org/160. So in this episode, Dr. Garisco and I are talking about his process improvement efforts at Ochsner and how that was made, you know, in large part necessary by Hurricane Katrina and its aftermath, where demand tripled in their emergency department in the short term and doubled in the long term. We're going to chat about things like standardized work and variation reduction, how that fits in with the practice of medicine and improving ED patient flow. Well, I want to thank and welcome our guest today, Dr. Joe Garisco. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Mark. I've been looking forward to this conversation for quite some time. I appreciate your invitation.
Well, sure. And I'm excited to talk to you, and I'm glad we're going to be crossing paths. I'm going to get to hear you speak at a couple conferences in early 2013. So we're going to talk about that and your other work. So if you can start off, introduce yourself to the listeners, your current role, professional background, and kind of in particular, I'm always curious to find out how you got involved in lean and other process improvement approaches.
Well, I always look forward to answering that question because it's important to sort of put together a timeline as to how I got to where I am as a physician. So I'm an emergency physician, and I practice at the Ochsner Health System in New Orleans, and my role is chair of emergency medicine, the academic chair of emergency medicine, but the larger role is system chair for emergency services. So I'm responsible for managing operationally seven emergency departments in our system. So it's a pretty big role, but it's interesting as to how I got here. I think about this movie Accidental Tourist, and I always call myself the accidental doctor because my background is really math and engineering, and I sort of fell into med school sort of by accident. It's a longer story than that, but I completed the curriculum and became a physician, but was kind of lost for a number of years, and ended up at some point getting out of emergency medicine, going back. But it was in the mid '90s where I really found sort of my roots as technology developed and data became more available. I found ways of looking at how we ran emergency departments and improving it. So I actually become full circle. You know, from engineering to start with, through med school, through a clinical career, and then the last 15 years has really back in engineering and re-engineering workflow. So it's full circle back to where I think really my biggest interests are.
Yeah. Now, with your background in engineering, are you an industrial engineer or what?
No, actually, a chemical engineer. And so, I think back, engineering back in the mid-70s, we were still using slide rules. And so, I'm not sure any engineering degree back in the mid-70s is applicable today.
younger listeners can Google slide rule.
Yes. I still have a few I'd like to show people. They're kind of, they're frozen stuck. They don't slide anymore, but.
I was wondering, a chemical engineer. I was wondering if you were an industrial engineer because, you're speaking at, the Society for Health Systems Conference in March. And for people who aren't familiar with, SHS, Society for Health Systems, is part of the Institute of Industrial Engineers. So I'm glad that conference is inclusive, not only to doctors, but to chemical engineers. Can you talk a little bit about, your keynote talk at the conference? What are some of the main themes that you'll be touching on?
Yeah, well, I hope to energize SHS because there's a sense of urgency to fix healthcare. I mean, it's essentially bankrupt, and it's bankrupt because we've priced ourselves out of business, and sometimes I think we price ourselves out of good service, and now we're approaching pricing ourselves out of quality. So, I go back to my first, and this is what I hope to talk about. I go back to my first meeting with SHS shortly after Katrina, Hurricane Katrina. So I hope to sort of bring that story to SHS again as to how, I sort of found my place at SHS, because as a group, they were focused on reengineering healthcare, and I thought that's where the answers were. So I'd like to talk about how that came to be and the work that I've done with SHS through the years as a result of that meeting, and then focus a lot on what we need to do. I think there's a incredible need to rapidly change the way we perform in medicine, and I think the answers are in engineering. It's the answers are within the group of people that are focused on this process. So I'd like to inspire them that they're keys to our success. I've thought that way since 2007, right after Katrina, that the answers to a lot of our problems were not in finding the latest new drug to treat a certain disease, but in finding game-changing ways to redo the work that we do. And so I'd like to sort of energize the group and give them some insight to where they should focus and inspire them to really care about what they do. Because I think that's where we're going to save healthcare is through societies like SHS.
And I'm curious to follow up. I mean, you mentioned Katrina. You were there at Ochsner at the time. I'm curious how much of the reengineering or improvement work that you've done was in response to challenges that you faced during Katrina, or was some of that done in advance to where it helped during Katrina? What was the timeline for you?
Well, I think I do have to go back a little ways, and so I go back to my my 10 clinical years in emergency medicine. What I saw was really a sweatshop approach to managing workflow. And so in 1990, again, I quit emergency medicine and went to anesthesiology and realized it was no better in the operating room. Mm-hmm. It was just as inefficient and wasteful as the emergency department. So when I came back to the ED, I made some requests. I said I wanted space, I wanted resources, and I wanted this thing called a computer. And I remember, that day the CEO of the hospital said, what's a physician going to do with a computer? I said, well, he didn't stay very long.
Yeah.
But, so the work of process engineering started, in the mid 90s for me, and we built a great department. In fact, it was extremely lean, extremely efficient. We had patient satisfaction above the 99th percentile quarter after quarter because we really delivered service to patients. And then Katrina hit, and that's sort of where things tie together. Katrina hit, and our the demand for emergency services at our facility tripled in a matter of 30 days. Hmm. So we went from being this very efficient ED to an ED that was had demand far outstripped what our space and resources could deliver. And so I was struggling with that. It basically destroyed my practice, destroyed our ED, almost destroyed our city. We all know that. So I remember one day I was looking at a brochure, and it was from SHS, and I looked at the topics, and you know, it struck me immediately that these are the people who are actually doing the work that I need to be involved with. I went to that meeting, again met some people I began working with over the years. So it was Katrina basically destabilized and created the burning platform for doing something different in our ED. Something different than we were doing. We thought what we were doing was working. It did work. But it didn't work at a different level after Katrina. So it was that SHS meeting, where we refocused on, sort of looking at our processes and seeing how we're going to take care of twice as many people as we took care of just a few months before. And so that was a second look, at what we were doing. But it started with Katrina. Katrina was a burning platform for change. And from there, we did a lot of work. We developed some new workflows in the ED. And from there, I went on to work with the American Hospital Association, and we deployed some of these processes into about 10 states in the United States, probably 150 hospitals. So a lot of work came out. But Katrina was a focal point where we went, you know, from what we were doing in the past to having to do something totally different going into the future. And so we've been doing that ever since.
Yeah. No, I mean, you know, Katrina, you know, clearly was traumatic for many, many individuals and for the city as a whole. In that short term, we had, you know, triple the volume. Clearly, I mean, there were a lot of people injured, but there were also a lot of hospitals that were completely knocked offline, right? Or what percentage of hospitals were offline, at least for a period?
Right. We went from, Mark, from 19 hospitals down to about 12. And really, when you look at it, there are probably three or four large centers that were still functioning. And so for a month or so, the city was depopulated. But as people came back into the city, relief workers, construction workers, people from all over the world came back to rebuild the city. There was very little access to hospital healthcare other than one of our facilities, and so the demand just skyrocketed, and all of our performance metrics fell off the table. So we re-engineered what we did and developed some processes that we think are pretty neat, we're still using those today.
Right. So I'm curious to hear more about, you know, you talked about doing something different. What were some of those things that were done differently? How did that impact, you know, things like waiting time and quality and cost? I mean, what were some of the major changes that you made in the emergency departments?
Well, I think we put a bigger focus on demand management, specifically with regard to how you handle variation. And we all know that the demand, and it's true today, crowding in the emergency departments are one of the biggest problems we face. And so we were seeing that for the first time, and we had to look at the problem. How do you manage demand that far outstrips your fixed capacity? And how do you manage variation of demand? So, that was our focus, was figuring that out. And so we had to look at leaning out some processes, reducing variation, understanding queuing theory, And sort of mathematically, trying to, solve this problem. And in the end, we realized that it's no different than what, you know, AT&T might do at a call center, or it might be no different than a manufacturer. So we looked at industries outside of healthcare and says, how do other industries manage random demand with high variance? And that's really the solution. So that's those are the sort of mathematical. I think they're all the solutions are really mathematical. Those are the problems we looked at, the word problems, and we think we solved them through traditional approaches that other industries use.
And so does that include things like, I mean, was there a matter of using, you know, software or simulation or other analysis to figure out things like staffing patterns or the number of rooms that are open, things like that?
Yeah, we did. So everything goes back to post-Katrina SHS. So at SHS, I met some very interesting individuals from the Banner Health System. Kevin Roche and specifically Mary Ellen Bucko. And Kevin's the head of the math department at Arizona State, and Mary Ellen's the head of management engineering at Banner. So they were working on the problem at the same time as I was working on it. And so in that collaboration, tools were developed to sort of manage demand and its variation and basically simulate what resources need to be in place in terms of space and people to solve that that word problem. Mm-hmm. And so we did use some tools. It wasn't high level simulation, but it was a tool set that helped us predict demand and the resources needed to address that. And it basically tried to address the error, the failure that most, I think, operations minded people in healthcare make is managing their work to some average demand. And so we all know that doesn't work. And so the tool sort of gave us a view as to what we need to do to solve this problem, not 50% of the time, but 95% of the time. Mm. And that's where healthcare fails. It's one of the critical failures, I think.
And I'm curious to explore a little bit more, you know, talk about, you know, answers being in engineering and, you know, things like process and systems. You know, I think you're among a handful of people out there who talk about, you know, the power of this in healthcare. How do you, when you, especially talking with physicians, you know, when we talk about phrases that are common in Lean or Six Sigma, things like standardized work, variation reduction, there's often kind of just, you know, an emotional reaction to that. People get upset, people get worried. How do you see, you know, the concepts like that fitting in with the practice of medicine? How do you communicate that and work with physicians on topics yeah. like that?
Yeah, that's another question I always look forward to, because we were meeting here at the hospital till late last night specifically about this issue, is that we have 14,000 employees here and we're a large organization. I think everyone else is struggling to sort of manage costs. And so we're trying to figure out how to, you know, we know that it's variance, largely that's, producing issues, and sometimes there's no variance. Sometimes the problem is there's standardization at a high cost point, and so that's a problem. But in largely, it's too much variation. So we're looking at everything from hip replacements to any type of medical device insertion to operating room procedures, and looking at clinical variation and the cost of that variation. The key thing is how do you approach physicians, and because it's a group that's fiercely independent, and how do you approach them and lead them to a different place in terms of how they approach their work? So it's about change management, and we've been successful at analyzing workflow, looking at the cost. And in the end, presenting a very smart, well-educated group and convincing that this is the best thing for the patients, the best thing for us. And so it's how it's phrased. So we're fortunate to have a great leadership. But I think getting to where we need to be, which is standardizing how we do things and reducing variance and therefore reducing costs, requires it's really about leadership and change management, because we know that's where the waste is. So that's a big challenge. So we work hard. In fact, so last night we were talking about how we execute on this, and how do we get this message out to physicians who are out practicing on a day-to-day basis.
Well, I think the way you, when you talk about leadership and you said, well, you know, how do you lead them? I think that's, the right approach as opposed to, I think some people, are just trying to force people to do things a certain way. That doesn't work. That's not respectful. So I think you're right. It's a matter of engaging people and helping them see the impact of the way things are done, whether it's negative impact on, negative impact on quality or cost, or if you can think of it in terms of a positive of how we can make things better. I mean, can you share an example, from your setting of, standardization and a benefit? Is that a matter of things like, protocols and, standard order sets, or is it, kind of go beyond things like that?
Yeah. So, we have brought some really key individuals into our organization over the last few years, and they're from industries around the country, some from healthcare, some from outside healthcare, to help us look at this. And so one of our early projects was, and I love this one, is to look at hip replacements. So we know when we look at hip replacements in our organization, there's a 300% variance in the actual cost of doing that procedure. And it has to do with a number of things. One is physicians selecting a prosthetic device that may be double the cost of another device. They may be using, for instance, you typically use cement in hip replacements, and some types of cement have a very expensive antibiotic embedded in it. So we look at the outcomes, and we say, okay, is there any clinical evidence that an antibiotic type of cement versus one without an antibiotic, does that improve outcomes? Does this device that costs twice as much as another device, does that affect outcomes? And so we look at the cost, we look at the outcomes, and we give that data to the clinicians and engage them in saying this is about the patient, it's about healthcare, it's about what we do for our community, and that's how we're affecting change. And so we look and say, is it appropriate to have a process that costs twice or triple another process that's really producing the same outcome? So what's important in all this is processing information. You have to be able to get the data. And until recently, healthcare has not had the data. Only the actuarials and the insurance companies had the data. So now we have it. And so we're using that to sort of not – is to lead physicians and to into a new place in their practice, without having to push and cajole, and they'll usually do the right thing. I think everyone sees that we have to do this, or the healthcare is in deep trouble. So that's been our approach. So hip replacement is just one, and we're looking at everything we do, and saying what does it cost, and can we show that doing it this way actually improves outcomes? And if it doesn't, then we have to do it a different way, and that's how we're looking at it. So we looked at other companies. I mean, look at, just take any growth company around the world. How do they standardize what they do 3,000 miles away? And they do two things. One is they create ownership remotely, and getting physicians to own their practice, own how they do things is one thing. And secondly, they reduce variance. I mean, if you go to Starbucks anywhere in the country, you're going to get the same product, but you get it because the people in that store own their business. So figuring out how large companies create ownership or reduce variance across the globe is how healthcare needs to approach how we franchise out best practice.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, it sounds like what you're talking about in terms of standardizing processes, it's done with a purpose. And I think sometimes people get hung up on it. Standardization is a good thing. But I guess, if you look at the results, it would be a good thing unless it's not, right?
Right. No, when you use the word purpose, last night, if there was one word that came out of our strategy sessions, it was purpose. I mean, it's interesting that you came up with that word, but it's really giving clinicians and the individuals who are helping us remodel healthcare is saying the purpose, keeping the patient at the center and creating a purpose, which is probably another phrase for creating that Bernie platform. But in that Bernie platform is having clinicians understand that there's a purpose for doing what we're doing. And it's not just to the purpose is pointing at the patient in the center and not trying to be draconian in how we manage healthcare, but to create a purpose for them. And they usually get that. But it takes organizations like ours. I think, we're a group practice, and so we're very much into looking at things as a group. I think this would be harder in community settings outside of large practices. So I think most of this work and most of the success would be in large group practices like Oxford, like Mayo, like Cleveland. And I could go on, Banner is another one. That critical mass of thinking is there now, and I think that's where the early success will be.
Okay, and one of the last things to touch on before we wrap up, let's talk about some other events you're going to be involved in. You and I are both speaking at the Scientific Assembly for the American Academy of Emergency Medicine in February in Las Vegas. I'll be co-presenting with Joe Schwartz, my co-author from Healthcare Kaizen, and you're going to be giving a talk. So I'm curious, to hear about tell the listeners about the type of topics that are covered in an event that's for physicians, emergency medicine physicians. How do the types of topics are focused on operations? How much is that a part of the general discussion?
So, Mark, I appreciate that question. I think it is important to recognize some upcoming events that people might be interested in. The first one is the AAEM, American Academy of Emergency Medicine Scientific Assembly in Las Vegas, February 9th through the 13th. And it's a great meeting. It constitutes emergency physicians. It's a specialty society. But we have, through the Operations Management Committee of AEM, we have set up a pre-conference workshop February 9th and 10th. And this is the workshop at which you will be speaking along with Joe Schwartz. And it's a two-day event featuring topics related to lean processing, re-engineering workflow in the emergency departments. Again, it's an operations-oriented focus. It's an incredible opportunity. There is incredible talent speaking at that meeting. We have Pia Vecellio from Stony Brook, New York. We have Tom Scaletta from Chicago, Chris DeFlitch from Penn State, Jody Crane from IHI. It's a great, incredible powerhouse of experts in the field of operations management. It's something not to be missed. And again, it's sponsored by the Operations Management Committee at the AEM in Las Vegas, February 9th and 10th for that two-day workshop. The second meeting is a little bit later in March by the Society for Health Systems, SHS, a society of Institute of Industrial Engineers, and that will be held in New Orleans. Of course, the focus of that society is on lean, and the group constitutes industrial engineers from all over the world. So I'll be addressing the society, again, talking about lean, waste reduction, all the contemporary topics that I think are really important in emergency medicine and in healthcare in general. So I think that's a second incredibly great meeting being held in New Orleans in March. The third meeting I'll be speaking at is the EDPMA meeting in Las Vegas in May. And EDPMA is the Emergency Physician Emergency Department Practice Management Association. And that group is largely made up of emergency department group practices. Some of them large, like Schumacher Incorporated out of Lafayette, Louisiana, Team Health, MCARE. They're involved in that, and it's the focus of that society is to improve the business of emergency medicine, but more specifically, the practice of emergency medicine. It's another meeting that I think will have significant interest from emergency physicians and those involved in the practice of and management of emergency departments around the country. That's EDPMA in Las Vegas. The focus of that will be leadership and change transformation, change management, and process improvement
in emergency department. So three great meetings. Again, it tells you that the focus in healthcare is moving toward lean and process improvement and reengineering workflow more than ever. So it's I think these three meetings highlight the fact that the work you're doing and the work that that we're being asked to focus on is increasingly the way to fix some of the problems in healthcare. So three great meetings, and I hope people can take a look at that, and if they have the opportunity to go, it would be a good opportunity to hear some great speakers and some great topics.
Dr. Joe Garisco, thanks so much for kind of sharing some of your work and experiences here on the podcast with us today.
Hey, thank you, Mark. I enjoyed it. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Lean Blog Podcast. For lean news and commentary updated daily, visit www.leanblog.org. If you have any questions or comments about this podcast, email Mark at leanpodcast@gmail.com.
Hey, podcast listeners, I'm excited to announce the release of the audiobook version of my new book, The Mistakes That Make Us, Cultivating a Culture of Learning and Innovation. Listen and dive into powerful insights on fostering growth through mistakes. Whether you're a leader, entrepreneur, or just trying to get better at learning from mistakes, this audiobook is for you. Get it now on Audible, Amazon, and Apple Books. Visit mistakesbook.com for more info.